Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
What a marvelous time we're having tonight. My goodness. Saturday, May 30th, we are rolling with a full head of steam into the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. Of course, we're coming to you live from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, and going out to our satellite and AM/FM affiliates. Thanks to the Liberty News Radio Network and over the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We are joined now, going from one academic to another, from Jared Taylor to Dr. Tomislav Sunik. Of course, Tom Sunik, a great friend of ours here in the Political Cesspool, is a former professor of political science. He is an author and a former Croatian diplomat. His latest book is Homo Americanus, Child of the Postmodern Age. It's been, like Jared, far too long since Tom has last joined us live on the air, but we are happy to rectify that problem right now. Tom, how are you this evening, my friend?
Well, thank you, James. Thanks. Thank you for your invitation, and my best greetings to Bill. I presume he's around there someplace hiding.
He's not hiding. He is right here in full force, Bill, aren't you?
Okay. Well, his voice is somewhat muted, so I thought he might be somewhere else. But it's good to have you guys there.
Well, he's trying to, you know, evade the leftists. We have to evade assassins
the left
out here.
Is
you know. Black.
So do I. Well, thanks, folks.
we camouflage.
I appreciate being with you, and it's my pleasure indeed.
Absolutely. You know, nothing is more, other than perhaps being a native-born Southerner, mm-hmm. there's nothing I value any more than time spent in fellowship with comrades. And, of course, Tom, last year, right around this time, you were here in Memphis for a week as our guest, and we had you on the program. Spent some great time with you traveling the city and doing different things, and I treasure those memories, and I think of them often. And it's great to have you back on tonight.
Thanks, James. I miss you all, folks, but I hope we'll hook up soon, because I will be at this conference, the Council of Conservative Citizens, and I hope to hook up with you again. You guys going to be there as well?
Well, you know we are, and you know that's what I was about to say. I was going to save that for the end of your interview, but since you mentioned it, folks, I mean, you want to come to a star-studded conference. You think we're having an all-star program tonight? You just heard from Jared. He'll be at the CSCC conference. Tom Sunik will be there as well, along with me, Bill, Winston Eddy, the entire Cesspool gang, and some other great people that have been on this program, like Craig Boddicker, Sam Dixon, Merlin Miller. We're all going to be there. We want to see you. So if you want to be there too, as I said just a moment ago, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, email us, and we'll let you know how you can join us and meet all these great leaders in person. And Tom Sunik will be there, and we're glad for that. So, yes, to answer your question, Tom, of course we will be there, and we will look forward once again to spending that time with you. All that being said, and I certainly don't mind spending the next hour exchanging pleasantries with you, as we would do if we were in person, but I guess business must intrude. Although we make our business fun here in the Cesspool, we talk about issues of personal and spiritual importance to us, of course. You wrote an article quite recently for the Occidental Observer, which was entitled, Who is an Anti-Semite? Who is an Anti-Semite? Tom, what was the article about?
Well, actually, I'm dealing with some lexical problems, or rather some semantic distortions surrounding this concept, and rather this compound noun, anti-Semitism. So I guess there are quite a bit of misunderstandings as far as this word is concerned. I just don't want to go into the etymology of the word and sound too academic. Of course, you know, this word is very elastic and very plastic at the same time, because most Jews are not Semites. Most Jews are of East European Khazar origin. There is a nice book by Arthur Koestler. I don't know if you're familiar with the name, a great scholar of Jewish origin who was actually a great connoisseur also of the totalitarian mindset. And among other things, he wrote the book. I guess the title of the book was The 13th Tribe, where he actually writes about the Khazars, this very mysterious Turkic tribe, so to speak, which popped up on the map in the 18th century. And then it's a good book because actually it gives us some more explanation as far as the origin of the word anti-Semitism is concerned. Now, the word itself, anti-Semitism, the way we use it nowadays, I don't know if you know this or your listeners, I guess it's worth looking up at the dictionary and examining a little bit. The word itself was coined by the German scholar Wilhelm Marr, or William Marr, we can say M-A-R-R, and he wrote a book back in 1873-74. The book was unfortunately not translated into English, but you know, the rough translation is the victory of the Jewry over the Germans. He was basically an anti-Semite himself. Der Sieg des Judentums über Germanentum. This is the original title of the book in German. So ever since this word, ever since the time, the word, or rather the compound noun, anti-Semitism has become a part and parcel of our vocabulary. However, let me tell you one thing from the German perspective, if I may. The word anti-Semitism is much more in usage in the United States of America, or for that matter in France, where they use the word antisemitisme. And of course, they have their replica of the ADL and Anti-Defamation League and La CRIF. In Germany, it's much more common, among even among leftist scholars, right-wing scholars, if you wish, to use the word, not the word anti-Semitism. They say anti-Jüdisch or anti-Jewish. So just to let you know how this word is highly complicated, let alone it's also a dreaded word. So we can discuss about that as well.
Well, you know, anytime you read something that's written by you, Tom, and I guess I'm saying this to you, I'm not seeking your agreement on this. I'm making a matter-of-fact statement here. If it's written by Tom Sunick, it's going to, and I don't want to succumb to ghetto language here, you're gonna cut them up. And I think you are such a dangerous asset. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess you're not dangerous to us. Of course, well, you're dangerous to our enemy because you make such well-reasoned and intellectual arguments that we're not supposed to be making. I mean, it's very easy for our enemies to dismiss folks who go out there with hysterical arguments. They overcompensate for their beliefs and they do things that are foolish. When you write something, Tom, I am so impressed with the way that you are able to deliver your opinions in a manner that is above reproach. I mean, Bill, you read this article. You'd have to agree with that.
Yes, I do. I do. You know, Tom, let me change the subject here for just a second.
Bill, could you just speak a bit louder because you are hiding someplace in the corner. Just speak a little bit louder, please.
Okay, sorry about that. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, it's excellent.
Okay, very good. There are some encouraging developments in Europe right now on the political front. Do you have any ideas or thoughts on perhaps a significant change in European politics? And I'm talking about either East or West. Do you think that there is hope, for instance, for overthrowing some of these politically correct and, in fact, totalitarian, soft totalitarian regimes in Europe?
I'm glad that you brought this up. In fact, even Jared said a few words about this upcoming European elections. They're very, very important elections, by the way, because they're pan-European elections for 750 seats in the European Parliament. And there is some likelihood that some quote-unquote right-wing or nationalist parties, let's call them identitarian parties, I prefer that word, will make some breakthrough and possibly we'll see not just Griffin from the UK, but also some guys from Austria, from the neighboring countries, from France, sitting in the European Parliament, and this could certainly make a big difference. However, I do not think it's probably a little bit too premature to talk about this. The elections will take place next year, and as a matter of fact, I will be talking about this subject. This is my topic at the Council of Conservative Citizens Conference: the European elections and the future of the nationalist parties in Europe. Well, I'll be covering the results of the elections as well. Now, as far as your question is concerned, of course, as long as there are some good and fine and refined people around, there is also always some hope. Let me, on a personal level, say a few words. I was a guest on the 1st of May rally, big rally, NPD rally. I delivered a little speech in German in front of quite a few of people, about 500 NPD supporters. And there was about 2,000 lefties on the other side of the fence. And I was in front of me, there were quite a few of German cops and vans. But I can tell you in private, quite a few of cops saluted me, and they said that they fully agree with what I said. And basically, I was talking about this political correct issue and the genesis of political rectitude and how, in fact, our language, I like to focus on language. I seem to be a little bit obsessed with linguistics because, after all, this is my field of study and research. And I was basically talking to the German audience, in fact, to NPD audience. By the way, all youngsters, more or less, all young folks.
Hey, Tom, yes. Do apologize for interrupting. We have to go to a commercial break. We're going to let you pick up your train of thought
when we're
leaving off, as soon as the political cesspool continues, right after these words from our sponsors. Set tight, everyone. Dr. Tomislav Sunik returns right after this.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I know we've had some callers on the line that we have not quite been able to get to. If you do have a question or would like to be on the line with Dr. Tom Sunik, our esteemed guest, give us a call, 1-866-986-NEWS. We'd love to have you on. We're going to try to work in a couple of calls here before the end of the program, if we can. And speaking of Dr. Sunik, of course, we're having him on tonight to discuss a couple of different topics, but we extended to him the invitation. Of course, he's always welcome to join us, but he had recently written an article entitled Who is an Anti-Semite? That article, just as the article that Jared Taylor was on to talk about, his article entitled Whiteout, both of those articles, I should say, are available online for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We have posted both of them prominently to our homepage, so if you want to go and check those out, well, go and check them out. Our website, I tell you, it's like an online theme park. Thrill rides, adventure around every corner, and it's free to get into. You can't beat that. ThePoliticalCesspool.org. Tom, you were relaying a story to our audience before we went into the last break. I'd like to ask you to continue.
Oh, just real briefly, I just wanted to add that, you know, actually the speech I gave in German 20 minutes, I was basically talking about the regulation of the German language and how actually it has to abide by political rectitude. And in fact, there were a couple of words that I made a point out of it that are absolutely, that cannot be translated into English, like Volksverhetzung, which is actually the paragraph 131 in the criminal code. And even the American judiciary cannot translate that word. We usually translate it in the United States of America like public incitation or incitation or popular incitement or something like that. So basically, my main point was that those who control your language, which is the typical Aurelian stuff, also control your destiny. So I don't want to go too very much into it. Basically, it was a nice festivity. I was very well welcomed. And there is some awakening going on even in Germany, because after all, let's keep in mind that Germany has very repressive, very harsh laws. And I happen to be quite familiar with them and some of my friends. In fact, I've been studying the criminal code in Germany, in the German language, very well. And it's full of lexical aberrations, to say the least.
You know, Bill, I'm encouraged to hear Tom give us this firsthand accounting of his experience over there as a speaker for this wonderful political party in Germany. You know, we were talking about that with Jared, obviously, in the last hour. They are obviously electoral gains being made over there with some of these nationalistic parties. Tom being well received by a large crowd there to speak on matters of national importance, vital importance, to the German people. And all of these things are happening when they have such repressive laws over there with regard to freedom of speech. I mean, this is obviously, Bill, wouldn't you say, extremely encouraging?
There's one element, however, in Western Europe that may pose a problem for the rise of the right, and that is a committed and militant radical left. And the difference in Western Europe between the right and the left is that the left will actually go to the streets and burn cars and riot until they get their way. And this has been a problem in Western Europe for many, many years. So far, there is no counter punch to the radical left. Do you agree with that, Tom? I mean, have you seen
that yourself in Europe? I was just talking with a friend of mine about this issue that you just brought up. Well, let me tell you, I mean, again, we have a classical case of hypocrisy. On the one hand, the left constantly talks about peacefulness and ecumenism and Samaritanism, you name it. On the other hand, you probably know what happened in the aftermath of the 1st of May in Berlin. Like, the left had literally burned down quite a few of cars and shops and just ruined all the pavements. So every time when the peaceniks, the so-called peaceniks, when they start talking about peace and brotherhood and unity, I'm always a little bit suspicious about it. Having said that, let me just make a statement here. It's quite an important one. What I admire, quote-unquote, among the left is that they're certainly much more disciplined and much more organized than we are.
Oh, yeah. Particularly the Jewish element of the left. I mean, you just can't out-organize them.
Yes, indeed. In fact, the left, you can probably reassemble here, I don't know, two or three folks to pass out leaflets, let's say, against illegal immigration here in California, where I'm staying right now, in quite a decadent country, by the way. I don't even recognize myself here because there are so many non-Europeans, so you sometimes wonder where the heck I am, you know, probably in Star Wars Trek or somewhere else. You know? Looks like a different antipode in my eyes. But anyway, I've always, given the fact that I grew up with the left, I know them very well, so I studied with them. We should not overestimate them. I mean, rather, what I get angry at is that we are so disorganized that we have those, what you call, ego trips, and everybody wants to be a sort of a chief on his turf. And this is probably one of our problems, which, of course, it serves as a good fodder to our enemies.
Well, Tom, I've noticed, however, that you say you grew up basically in the communist bloc under a communist totalitarian regime.
Sure.
And yet the backlash against, I would assume, would be the enforced multiculturalism and the enforced political correctness behind the Iron Curtain. There seems the backlash has been this very, very strong nationalistic reemergence in places like Russia, Croatia, Bulgaria, and the various countries of the East. And doesn't it seem strange that when the left had absolute power in these countries, they were unable to massage the basic philosophy of multiculturalism and multinationalism into the people? Do you see that perhaps the right is better organized in Russia and places like this because they survived these regimes?
Let me tell you, it's an interesting point that you've just brought up. In terms of organization, in terms of structure, I wouldn't have too much hope. In fact, I wouldn't harbor too many illusions about the future of quote-unquote right-wing parties in Eastern Bloc, because they still have this mindset, they still have this vestiges of communism in their mindset. But in terms of this national energy, if I can put it metaphorically, there's definitely much more potential in Eastern Europe and in Russia than in Western Europe. So, of course, when you talk to youngsters in Russia or when you talk to young folks in Croatia, they're much more... They don't use this Mickey Mouse language. They don't use euphemisms. They say aloud what they say. We don't like gypsies. We don't like foreigners. Get them out. And if they see a black guy, you know, dating a white Croatian lady, they'll probably work him up. I'm serious about that. So you don't want to mess with those issues, because all of Eastern Europe is highly racially homogenous area, if you want to put it that way. Their problem, however, that's what I'm a little bit concerned with. They still have this mindset of what we were discussing about this in our last segment in our last show, they still have this mindset of Homo Sovieticus. They're very poorly organized, and I think that the Americans, for that matter, our comrades from here, from France, could probably pitch in and probably help them get a little bit organized. And on top of it, I'm sad to say that, but we gotta utter that. We have to make that point. Namely, there is a great deal of this inter-ethnic bickering going on between Serbs, Croats, Russians, Ukrainians. Of course, to some extent, you have it between Walloons and the Flemish folks. So these are some of those issues that need to be spanned and overcome. And I presume that the Americans, in that sense, you and me, that we could probably be of some benefit, that we could probably make an effort to bridge those gaps.
Well, Tom,
that would be... I think, advantageous, but certainly they have a smaller bridge to cross than we do, where clearly America is becoming more multiracial year by year, and the East, at least, is attempting, Eastern Europe, that is attempting to preserve their national character. And we seem to be abandoning that by leaps and bounds, both here in the United States and, for instance, in Great Britain, less so in France, Germany, and Austria.
Yes, well, Tom, that's for sure. I agree with you.
All right, Tom, before you elaborate any further on Bill's point, let's take another break, pay some homage and respect to our advertisers, and then we'll come back with more with Dr. Tom Sunick when the political cesspool concludes right after this.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Peggy Sue. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
And with that being said, let's go to the phones right now, why don't we? Mike in Ohio, you're on the line. Mike, are you with us?
Hello, Mike. Can you hear us?
Apparently not. We'll try to get back to the phones in just a second. I do a woeful job of getting to all of
them. Can you hear me, James? Are you still there?
Yes. Tom, you're there. We were trying to get to a caller. Apparently miscommunication. Anyway, Bill, continue on with Tom Sunick, if you might.
Yes.
We were discussing before the break I would say the racial homogeneity of the Eastern European countries. And I just think that that's an advantage. It certainly is an advantage when you're talking about asserting certain political viewpoints, and certainly, asserting yourself as a nation. You were talking, Tom, too, about perhaps Americans networking with Eastern Europeans in terms of organizing.
By all means, we just have to abandon those petty little issues of, I call it tribalistic inter-ethnic quarrels that simply won't get us very far. And actually, it's, as I said earlier, it's the fodder for our enemy. We should not give our enemy the chance to make a laughingstock out of us. So I guess I'm certain, well, on a personal level, I would be very happy to see more American friends and colleagues travel to Croatia or Serbia, for that matter, in Russia, and meet some folks there, and just bring their experience, and vice versa, because we have to enrich each other. That's the whole point of it's a highly complex issue. The concept of nation state, whether we like it or not, and I wouldn't like to be offensive towards some of your listeners, it's simply gone, and it's gone with the wind, so to speak. As far as I'm concerned, I have very good friends in Argentina, or for that matter in Russia, or for that matter in France. And we have to look at the broader image. It's simply not, if we just stick with us, with our local turf, which is fine, of course, but in our globalistic age, we have to use the weapons of our enemies. So I guess we just have to do some networking in different parts of the world where the white people, where our European folks live and reside.
Well, let me say this. I think it's remarkable that after 70 years, basically, of separation from the West, that the Iron Curtain falls and we find common ground with people half a world away. That certainly can't be an accident. There must be some sort of blood connection or psychological connection or subconscious connection between these peoples. Do you agree? I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense.
I'm glad that you brought this topic up. And by the way, I discussed yesterday about this topic with my friend Kevin MacDonald on VOR, and I would urge your listeners to get tuned on the 16th of June. It will be pre-announced by VOR, Voice of Reason. And it was a very academic discussion we had. It was like a dialogue between me and Kevin regarding in-groups and out-groups. And we actually, the main point being is that all European, quote-unquote, tribes, be they of Celtic origin, or be they of Slavic origin, or Germanic origin, we have a common denominator. We are of the same race. We are of the same Promethean spirit. So I guess it was a very good academic discussion we had. And again, once again, I would urge your listeners to get tuned in on the 16th of May.
I don't know about Bill, but I would certainly pay admission to see Tom Sunick and Kevin McDonald have a conversation with one another. But Tom, I want to elaborate, or I guess echo what Bill is saying. It, I guess, on one hand, would be rather surprising, and on the other hand, it's perhaps even logical to see that those people and those nations who suffered worst under the Bolshevik and communist regimes are now perhaps, well, there's no perhaps about it. It's an absolute fact. They are our biggest allies. What constitutes that, Tom? What played a role in that? They suffered so much. We're under the strictest of were absolutely locked down in terms of thought and political expression, and yet the Iron Curtain falls, as Bill said, and here they are doing more for our people than even we are here in these so-called free countries. What led to that? Why did that occur?
I'm glad that you brought this up. In fact, I should say probably bluntly that we're not as castrated, you know, if I could put it that way, psychologically, as this dictatorship of well-being in modern Western capitalist democracies is all about. So we certainly, during the communist epoch, we knew how to decipher our enemy, or rather our foe, and we had to play the game in order to survive, because what was communism all about? It was how to learn the talent of survival. And unfortunately, that's what I keep saying every time and keep writing about. This liberal capitalist system is so insidious, and it knows how to hide and to sort of package well its weapons, and it knows how to brainwash youngsters in particular in a very insidious fashion, in a very sophisticated fashion, to the extent that you don't even realize that your worst enemy, even that your best friend is actually your worst enemy, because the whole value system has been transposed. It has been turned upside down. So when I was a kid, even we all just had to play the game. You know, we were like, for instance, in communist Yugoslavia, or for that matter, in communist Czechoslovakia. Officially, in the public life, you just had to put up one face, and in private at home, you were a different person. You were a more organic person. So that probably saved our lives. And I'm really sorry to see what's going on, not just here, but also in its replica, Western Europe. And to some extent, I might say there is a greater potential in Russia, in Eastern Europe, in the years to come, than in Western Europe. I will see. I mean, what we need are some good leaders, not just the leaders, political leaders, but also intellectual leaders.
Well, we need people who are willing to put their money where their mouth is, so to speak.
Exactly.
People who will go out there and not just be content to talk about the problems, but will take their actions to the streets and fight for our freedoms and fight for our way of life, self-determination. You know, two faces have I isn't the case anymore over there in those former Soviet bloc countries. I mean, you know, you were talking about a moment ago, in order to essentially live back a few decades ago, you had to behave in such a manner. But now there's no beating around the bush about it. People are very, perhaps you would say, in your face about their beliefs, and they're not shy about letting people know about it.
I'm so encouraged
to see that. That's what we need. That's what we used to have.
Let's look what's going on in Hungary, or for that matter in Croatia, or for that matter even in Czechia, in Slovakia. They have very strong nationalist parties, very strong, very very powerful, quite powerful. In fact, some of them make the coalition governments over there.
And over here, nationalistic candidates, if they're even allowed to run, if they're even allowed to find a place on the ballot,
stated that the folks were so fed up, you know, with this communist mendacity and lies, they simply don't want to be. I don't want to use this dirty word, but they simply don't want to be with this liberal, you know, mendacity now coming through different channels. You know, of course, you notice that this hypocrisy, you notice this grotesque type of a show going on. Like I can tell you firsthand, as a former Croatian diplomat. Like, you know, there is a certain pressure from our super ego, if you wish, even when Croatian diplomats, or for that matter, East European diplomats from Romania or Czechia, if they want to score good points with Washington, D.C., or with American congressmen, of course, the first trip they have to make, take a guess, you know where, they first have to travel to Tel Aviv and do their rituals, and then they make a detour, and then afterwards they travel to Brussels, and the second stop in Washington is Washington, D.C., always in the back of their mind. I'm talking in terms of political correctness, in terms of political rectitude. If they want to have scored some good points, if they want to become, quote-unquote, more Americanized, then they have to have a good blessing by the secular popes back in Tel Aviv or some other guys sitting in the Knesset.
Well, Bill, I'm sure people have tuned in tonight and are wondering what happened to the political cesspool. Here we are talking about things that perhaps might instill a sense of hope into our people. Yes, it's true that everything we've talked about that's been hopeful tonight is occurring across the sea, but nevertheless, pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that too often we become negative when we think about the Obama regime and the rights we may lose very soon and the danger we're in and our economic problems. But, you know, we have to remember that around the world there are people who are equally concerned about their continued existence and survival and, in fact, triumph over the third world and the dangers of multiculturalism and multiracialism. We realize that we do have a lot at stake. And I think it's very encouraging that even in countries that we once had on our nuclear target screen, you know, who were might very well have been vaporized by us or us by them, now see where the real danger lies.
Well, I guess the thing about it is, and we've got to go to break, and then we'll come back with Tom Sunup for one final segment this evening. You know, it might be a world away, but to know that those who suffered the horrors of the Bolshevik regime in Soviet Russia, that they could fight through that sort of tyrannical oppression and still come through it with a strong nationalistic identity. If they can do it, what we're suffering over here is a piece of cake, and we can do it too. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. We got welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We've had Jared Taylor on the program this evening, Dr. Tomislav Sunik, our guest right now for the next couple of minutes until we run out the clock this evening. Of course, we'll be back with you next week, Saturday night, beginning at 6 p.m. Central Time here on the Liberty News Radio Network, the Political Cesspool Radio program. Don't forget, you can read the articles that inspired us or prompted us, I should say, to have Jared and Tom on this evening. Those articles can be found at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And while you're there, don't forget that tomorrow is your last opportunity to participate in our fundraiser for this month. Donate $100 or more to our program, and we will give you a token of our appreciation, the Craig Boddicker DVD, A Conversation About Race. So take advantage of that and more while you read these articles at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Bill, a final question for Tom Sunik.
Tom, I've been reading Gulag Archipelago 2 by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and one of the things that struck me about his writing about the Gulags, first, the 20 or so million people that died under the Soviet regime, under Soviet totalitarianism, but also the ability of the Soviet authorities and the Soviet commissars and thugs to instill mistrust among the people. And I certainly see that happening here in the United States among the white population, that white people don't trust each other. And I wonder what kind of effect that's going to have over the long run. But we know that in Russia and in Eastern Europe, there was certainly a dysgenic effect just due to the numbers of people who were murdered there.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. As a matter of fact, there is my piece, should I say, a rather scholarly piece on dysgenic effects in Eastern Europe as a result of those mass crimes, you know, carried out by the communist thugs. Well, let's face it, you hear on the daily basis, I mean, you open up the newspaper, the Washington Post, Le Monde, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, any place, you open Excelsior in Mexico, any place, you'll almost daily you'll find a reference to the Holocaust body counts, but you never, ever, ever hear about what the communists did. And, of course, you know, the first question you need to ask yourself, you don't have to be an intellectual, you don't have to be a scholar, how come? And I guess I know the answer why, because it will bring us, when we start narrowing down this communist criminology, if I can put it that way, then we come to those big stalwarts, and quite a few of them were in the early Soviet governments, and not just in Soviet governments, but also in Eastern Europe, were of Jewish extraction. So it's a very complicated and very touchy issue, but I think it needs to be addressed. Now, the second point that you have raised, that this mistrust, it's a good point indeed, because, again, communist totalitarianism, what people usually think in terms of gulag and the suicide system and how people get massacred and killed and so on, but basically communism is this mistrust. This is the spirit of totalitarianism. This is quite typical of I remember this ambiance in Eastern Europe where I grew up as a kid. But now, unfortunately, I see it on the daily basis here in the United States, particularly in academia, even with some people, I'm not going to mention their names, some academics who usually pat me on my shoulder when they're face-to-face with me, but who would never, ever come out in public and encourage me to do something. So I guess this duplicity, this intellectual duplicity, has become widespread, not just in the United States of America, but also in Europe. And what I keep saying, guys, unless we stand up, you know, Don't allow this machinery, this salami tactics, as we used to call it back in communist Yugoslavia, overwhelm you. If you stand up, if you just frown a little bit, you don't have to be violent, you don't have to use slurs, but just frown a little bit, say, come on, hey, folks, oh, wait a second, what are you doing? What are you telling me this? We were discussing a while ago about this Sonia Sotomayor, whatever her name was. There are certain issues we just got to stand up in a decent, polite fashion and say, come on, folks, you know, don't take us for fools, because if we just shut up, then this machinery, this semi-totalitarian machinery starts working.
Well, Tom, you've got the prescription written to a T, and if everyone would attack the issues the way that you do it from a scholarly and intellectual position, as you said, you don't have to be a scholar, but you should at least be...
Absolutely.
You should at least have some sort of decorum within your argument. I mean, you just can't get up there and start blurting expletives and obscenities and things like that. There's got to be some sort of a structure and reason to your argument, and certainly you provide a great template of how to conduct such a reasonable
argument.
And
by the way, listen, I don't want to flatter you. I love the people in Tennessee. I'll tell you quite frankly, I don't consider myself some country club conservative. I like the people. I like blue-collar workers, American workers, European workers, because sometimes I find more justice, more sense of justice and honor than among those quote-unquote leftist academics. I know that very well.
Yes, I know that's a fact, and spending a week here with you last year, how much you love the rural Mississippi countryside in Alabama, Tennessee. Yes, we're all populists here, but at the same time, we do need to have some logic and reason and professionalism into our arguments. And of course, now again, ladies and gentlemen, I know we're beginning to get short on time. You can meet Tom Sunick and Jared Taylor and the rest of us, for that matter, at the Council of Conservative Citizens National Conference, June 26th and 27th, about 3 hours south of this location where we sit now in Memphis, Tennessee, Jackson, Mississippi. Jackson is where we'll all be that last week of June, about a month from now, a little less than a month from now. If you want to find out how you too can be there, it is, of course, open to the public. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and email me, and I will make sure you get an answer. That being said, we're going to quickly try to take a phone call. Mark in Pasadena, California. Mark, you're on the line.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Great to have you.
I'm just trying to connect the dots throughout history. And if I look at communist Russia, when it was first, you know, you take a look at Trotsky, Lenin, and all those wonderful gentlemen, they were all Jews, right? And then when I look at what's going on in the United States right now, who is pushing this certain agenda, the Obama agenda, the diversity, multiculturalism agenda, that left. I mean, we call them the left, but that is really the Jew that's doing this. And if I look throughout Eastern or Western Europe, every place that's been done, it seems like it's always coming from the Jews. And, my question to Tom, am I missing something? Am I being off base? Or is that really where it's coming from?
Yes, Mark. Can you hear me? Yeah. Mark, well, a very simple answer. I usually don't like using my value judgments. I always refer my students or my listeners to some prominent Jewish authors who wrote quite explicitly about this issue. This is precisely what my last article was all about. So I would suggest to you to read Yuri Slezkin's book. He's a professor at UC Berkeley. he talks about these issues quite explicitly. So he's a very politically correct guy. So that's an irony of history again. What the Jewish guy can say cannot be uttered and said by a Goyim guy like me. But basically he says the obvious, that basically quite a few of early Bolsheviks, well, almost all of them, quite a few, were of Jewish extraction. And then you had the very interesting intellectual somersault, so to speak, that many of them turned into neoconservatives so later on when this communist mystique was losing its momentum at the beginning of the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, but no, I think, Mark, you're drawing a very obvious conclusion. It's a conclusion that, in fact, they write about in their own publications. It's been well documented on this show, and you don't have to even be a follower of the news to pick up on this. Joel Stein, for instance, in the Los Angeles Times, gloating, in fact, about the fact that all of the Hollywood movie studios, and this is just one example of their disproportionate amount of power, not just in the entertainment industry, but in academia and government and education and you name it, they've got it. And he, of course, gloats that they, in fact, do, the Jews do, in fact, control Hollywood lock, stock, and barrel. He celebrates it, and if we said the exact same thing as he, we would be dismissed as anti-Semitic. And this is something, again, we need to have logical discussions about this because these double standards have to be deconstructed. Tom, we're just about out of time. A final word from you, sir, before we sign off this evening, a final word from you to the audience.
Well, thank you, folks. Well, just from a very superficial glance here in California, where I am right now, I think I may have seen some reawakening a little bit at the white folks here, even at the grocery store. They, you know, when you sort of tease them a little bit, asking them rhetorical question, it seems to me, I may be wrong, I'm always very suspicious and skeptical, but it seems to me there is some momentum going on. It seems to me that people are finally beginning to realize that this is their country, because, listen, things are not as they were supposed to be. So it gives me some hope, and I guess I'm getting a little bit optimistic.
If California, yeah, if California isn't, at least in the California, if they're not coming to realistic conclusions over there, as the old saying goes, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? I mean, if they're not seeing what's going on there, there's just no hope for the left coast.
Yes, but, I fully agree with you, but there is some reawakening going on.
Well, good. I hope
it might spill over to our shores as well.
You know? I haven't been to California in 9 years, and I'm glad to hear somewhat of a positive report, even from that belly of the beast.
There are some good friends here, very good comrades, I can tell you, very educated, very good people around, believe it or not.
I would certainly believe it. If you are in their company, they would have to be people of the highest quality. Tom Sunick, thank you so much, my friend, for being with us tonight on the Political Cesspool radio program. We will see you in a couple of weeks' time down there in Jackson, and we're looking forward to it, counting the days as we speak. You have a great great time there in California and a safe trip back to the South.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Bill, you just can't beat guys like Jared and Tom, but of course we'll try to do it again all over again next week, will we not? Good night, everybody. We love you.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.